The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
So what percent of your time is dedicated to the podcast? I'm going to ask you about some things that have been challenges between the two of you. What do you think gets in the way of your communicating more directly to Becca? You're trying to corral Francesca and you're feeling spoken down to. What are one of or a couple of Francesca's buttons? By the way, thank you very much for disclosing that.
This week on Works For Me, we get grilled. Welcome to Works For Me, the show where we test out productivity strategies on our own personal problems to find out if they'll work for you. I'm Becca Greenfield.
And I'm Francesca Levy.
This week, it's Francesca's turn.
And Becca's turn to tackle a thorny workplace problem.
We're doing things a bit differently this week. Instead of one of us taking on something we're struggling with at work, we're going to solve a problem together.
Yeah. So we're right in the middle of making this first season of our show, and we realize that we have a work issue we could both address. How to work together better as a team. We're in close contact a lot for this podcast, and naturally tensions arise. But we also realize we've never treated our own collaboration as a thing to work on. We've just kind of taken it for granted.
Yeah, like any team, we have conflict. We get into fights.
And we don't really address them. I wouldn't say we avoid them, but we've never taken the time to sit down and like talk through how we feel about a conflict, about a deadline.
No. We just move. Keep on, keep
you
it on.
Keep on moving.
Yeah. And I think that's true for most teams of people working closely together. You do the work. Sometimes there's these little moments of frustration and you just keep on going with the work. You don't actually consider the relationship.
So that's what we're going to do this week. We're going to focus on how to work better together.
So the first thing we did was we went out and found a duo that's been working together well for years.
I am Erica Cerullo, one of the co-founders of a Kind, a business that I started with one of my best friends from college, Claire Mazur.
And I'm Claire Mazur. I'm the other half of this of a Kind co-founding work wife writing team.
Claire and Erica have been friends for 17 years and business partners for 9. And they've spent a long time figuring out how to make their working relationship thrive.
I would say one of the things that we've learned over the course of our relationship is a willingness to be vulnerable with one another, to not be afraid that if you express that you're overwhelmed or that, you know, stuff's not going well or you don't feel great about a project, to not be afraid that the other person's going to judge you for it or be like, oh, she's really fallen off.
And I think the other thing that goes hand in hand with that is transparency. I think the more you can share with one another, whether that be about, context of your professional life outside of just your relationship or even context of your personal life, the more that helps inform the other person's understanding of everything, including your vulnerabilities.
Claire and Erica also believe that the power of female friendship has helped them succeed. For their new book, Work Wife, coming out in March, they talked to other successful female pairs to explore what's special about women working together.
We think about the qualities of female friendship that when they start becoming part of the workplace, reshape the workplace. Just the caretaker role that women often play by nature of the way our society works and has worked means that they bring more fluidity. And so by leading with these qualities like compassion and vulnerability and emotional transparency, you just create a totally different environment.
What I like about their point of view is that they treat being women like an asset and not a liability. Like, I think a lot of the times that when people talk about women working together, there are a lot of negative stereotypes about it. And they instead, their whole take is women actually bring qualities to working together that make businesses better.
And hopefully, podcasts.
So our problem is that we think we could work better as a team. Ideally, we'd work together as well as Claire and Erica do. So we dug a little deeper with them to figure out how they got to such a healthy place. And Claire told us they see a management coach.
It's not necessarily right for everybody, but when you're working really closely with someone day in and day out, it can be huge. We say that he's one part executive leadership, one part therapist, and one part marriage counselor.
Claire and Erica essentially go to couples therapy.
I know. I was kind of relieved to hear that they weren't just born perfect collaborators. And also, I had no idea that there were people who do that, who will just be your work wife couples therapist.
Yeah, I love it.
So that's this week's experiment. We're going to find a management coach and see if one session can help us improve our working relationship.
We'll consider the experiment a success if a week after our session, we've implemented any of the coach's tips to solve a problem.
I'm extremely nervous. I'm just terrified at the idea of having to kind of think through this stuff and talk openly about it. It's a weird thing to do at work.
Yeah, it's way easier to just let it fester.
Yep.
We found a management coach named Ben Michalis, who, according to his website, drbenmichalis.com, is an elite performance coach for CEOs and business partners. He costs $400 an hour per session, so not cheap.
Before we met him in person, Ben asked us to take some time to think about our relationship. He wanted us to send an email with some things we liked about working together and some things we didn't.
So this part definitely made it feel real for me. I don't know about you. It was like uncomfortable to put to words my thoughts and feelings.
Yeah. I knew you were never going to read the email because we sent separate emails to him. And even just writing down my private thoughts about what I thought we could work on was nerve-wracking.
Yeah, somehow. It felt dangerous. Then after that stressful experience, the day of the session arrived.
I feel like I'm like interviewing right now with the two of you. Like a job interview. We can change. Interrogative setup.
Ben met us on a Friday morning. That's okay. We sat down facing each other, made some small talk, and got started. And now we're just going to play you an edited version of what happened next.
So, you know, I'm pretty direct, and so I'm going to ask questions, and if you don't want to answer them, like, feel free to just not answer them, but my goal is for both of you to actually have real takeaways at the end of today so that, like, you actually have some things to use. So that this is not just helpful for people outside, but for the two of you. What would you say, Becca, is one of your favorite things about working with Francesca? Or some of
them. Can I say more than one?
Yeah, you could say several of them.
Well, we like each other. Like, yeah. I like hanging out with somebody hang out with. We talk about a lot of things, and we have similar interests and like talking about the same thing. So that's cool and really fun. And then more on like a work note, that I think she has a lot of good big picture ideas. So like this show was her idea. I have a hard time coming up with ideas. Everyone does. So it's nice to work with somebody who came up with good ideas that you get to work on.
That's so nice.
And how about you?
Well, I would say the same thing, that like I think we're compatible as friends. She's really thoughtful about giving critiques and edits. She'll go through a script or an episode and give me her thoughts on it. And she's not rude, but she's direct about what, you know, she thinks needs to be changed. And I'll usually agree, or if I don't, like, we'll talk through it and we'll come to another decision.
Obviously, the two of you really like each other. You really respect each other, and which is great. So really what we're doing is we're looking at sort of optimizing your relationship, which is a great place to be. So what we're going to move into now is I'm going to ask you about some things that have been challenges between the two of you, and I'm going to let either of you start.
I can start.
Oh, okay.
Since Becca started with the nice things.
Sweet.
I am really oversubscribed with all of my other work, and that's my fault. But I feel like Becca sometimes assumes that I am just not working hard enough on this project because I'm not, or because I'm putting it off, or I'm being lazy. And I think that I have often had to triage, and I have found myself triaging, and I have bumped this show down the priority list at times. And so I think that pisses Beck off. And then I think that she will sometimes demand a lot of time for the show, or request a lot of time for the show in a way that makes me feel a little bit like she doesn't think I'm working hard enough on it, but I feel like I also just have other things to do.
Any thoughts about that? By the way, thank you very much for
sharing. Well, it's true. You're right. I get frustrated. Like, I want us to work on it. But it's not like I don't think you're not working on other things. Like, I know why that's happening. I know you're busy. But I also think you're not, you've never told me that.
I mean, it's really interesting to hear Becca say, while she understands in the abstract that I have other work to do, I've never actually said, this day or this week is dedicated for me 90% on this particular other project, which would be very easy to do. And I haven't done it. And I think my guilt gets in the way.
How do you communicate, like, over the course of, like, okay, we're working on this podcast? How does that information get transmitted between the two of you? I know it's a bit of a ham-fisted question, but like...
Like, how are we doing it now?
Yeah, how are you communicating what like, the workload for a week?
I mean, in our chat.
Ah, okay, sorry. I'm cutting you off.
Yeah,
but
cut it off.
I sort of set you up for that. When you're communicating emotional information, like, oh, this is not going the way I thought it would, if you can, do it in person. Hmm. If you're going to need to push a deadline, or if you're trying to push back, do it in person. You're entitled to be upset if a deadline isn't respected, but I do think that if you communicate, like, your disappointment visually, what does that do? It does a couple of things. It actually, there's a real consequence for you not having kept up the agreement, is the emotional consequence of seeing your partner be disappointed.
Yeah.
So it makes you less likely to do it in the future because you're like, oh, I don't want to do that. And you actually can soften some of the disappointment through communicating face to face, but you can do it in a way that's empathic as opposed to online. Everything gets lost. And I do find that a lot of fights between partners or disagreements happen because of the lack of context on those channels.
I get meeting face to face completely, but I don't necessarily need to understand Becca's disappointment because I feel like I anticipate Becca's disappointment at all times.
Understood. But one of the things that I'm trying to actually help with is increase the reliability of the signal. So because you anticipate things,
yeah.
Becca might be like, you know, having a week where she's just like hanging out drinking margaritas at her desk, which happens all the time, I understand.
Yes, right now. Mark.
Or she may be anticipating a vacation or she may be under some other deadline. And I think that you imagine more disappointment than is actual. Okay, so I have a question for you.
Yeah.
What are one of or a couple of Francesca's buttons? Things that, like, she just does not like, that do not work for Francesca.
Oh my goodness. I have to think about that. Do you know what your buttons are?
I mean, the only thing I can really think of when it comes to our relationship is when you're just expressing, like, your frustration that a time frame is being compressed or that a deadline's going to be missed or that we're not going to get done what we expected to get done. It'll come out as like, okay, but guys, we're really, you know, now we're really pushing it or now we're really behind on time. And I feel like talked down to.
So I was thinking about how these things get communicated. And I'm wondering if you switch the language to. So I understand that we need to push the deadline. It makes me very nervous. And it's sort of a soft emotion that you're holding, that you're expressing, as opposed to. Not even that you express a hard emotion, but you're reading a hard emotion.
Right.
And so being conscious of the fact that Francesca actually tends to read hard emotions because of some of the
childhood trauma.
Yeah, guilt, like some of the guilt that you expressed, that if you own it and you say, hey, it just makes me a little bit nervous, it may have a better effect as opposed to feeling like Becca's pissed at me.
Yeah, that seems right. I am conscious that I can sometimes be harsh. And people are like, you're direct. Like, they say that in a nice way, but I also know that means, I know what that means.
Would it help if I responded with the way I was feeling about it? If I was like, I'm also nervous about this. I just feel like it's assumed or it's understood or should be understood that I'm also worried about all these deadlines and worried about getting things done on time. Would it help if I communicated that better in the moment where if I'm like, guys, I'm really worried about this, but I can't see any other way than for us to push this 2 days.
Yeah, I think sometimes it comes off as like you're more laissez-faire about it. And like, yeah, it'll just get done in the time it'll get done because that's what we have. And it's like, well, it might not. Yeah. I don't know.
So by doing that, you're joining Becca. It's like, hey, I'm with you on this. I feel nervous about this too. You know, how can we solve this? I think that that's going to be a far more effective way of you strengthening the relationship as opposed to eroding the trust.
Cool.
Yeah, I think that it's my style sometimes, or I have a tendency to under-communicate those feelings. I kind of like lock down and I become defensive because I'm like, well, Becca doesn't think I care. And then I reinforce that by not expressing that I care. So that's a weird self-sabotaging thing that I do. But I think I just need to not reading Becca's concern as like an indictment of me and actually be open about the fact that I'm concerned too.
One thing that I think we tend to do, especially now, but is like the idea is that everything is an emergency. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have a really high standard of quality for your work product, but also realize like it's really not an emergency.
I think I suffer from that. That just seems like in our work lives, everything, in my work life, like everything is like a reflection of who I am and like everything is the most important thing. So I think, yeah, it feels higher stakes and maybe I need to dial down the stakes a little bit. Like it's a fun, frankly, very silly show about productivity.
It can feel that way.
Episodes might not be perfect.
You know, there's nothing in nature is perfect. It doesn't exist, right? And like taking that burden off of yourself, but also the imperfection is the show, you know, is the whole thing. And it's like, for me anyway, it's the things that are imperfect that are interesting. And like, it's the moments where things don't go right that you get to really, I mean, I know it sounds a little trite, but you do get to learn about yourself and it's kind of fun. That's basically it. I mean, usually like you kind of have the takeaways. And so I would have you guys sort of work on those things together and see how it's going. If it's improving, it's not improving. And then, you know, that would be the next step.
Yeah. Well, we happen to be in the midway point of this season for this show that we're doing. So there are many of these.
We can apply these
experiences to come.
Yes.
Good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. This was good.
Yeah.
How did you feel after that session with Ben?
I was exhausted. I felt like I needed to go home and take a nap.
Yeah, it was the first thing we did in the morning, and I couldn't believe I had a whole day ahead of me where I had to do more things.
We just had to go back to our desks and act like it was a normal work day. But I felt good about it. We said things that needed to be said. We didn't hurt each other's feelings too much, and we realized we were much more aligned on a lot of things than we thought we were.
Yeah, you didn't call me a mean bee. In fact, some of the things that I thought you didn't like about me, you actually like about me. So yeah, I thought it was productive, and I took away 3 specific tips that I think we could use going forward in our relationship. So the first one I would say is that we could communicate more face-to-face. Ben was pretty adamant about that. The second one is try to remind ourselves that not everything is an emergency all the time. And the third one is that we can talk about our emotions more when we're communicating instead of telling the other person what we think they need to do.
Yeah, so the next step was to see if any of these tips actually work. We'll see how that went after the break.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state influential ministers and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
So now it's a few days after we've met with Ben, and he's given us some tips, but honestly, we weren't thinking about them that much because we were busy trying to wrap up an episode of this show. And then something happened. Becca, you requested a last-minute change to an episode that was about to be published, and you did it over chat.
I know. And you had left for the day, and you didn't get to sign off on the change, which is what needed to happen. But it ended up going through anyway, and you were understandably not happy about it.
Yeah, so I sent you kind of a terse message over a chat, basically saying, it's too late to do anything about this now, but I don't like the way we handled this. And then, of course, it dawned on me, this was the perfect opportunity to test out Ben's advice to handle these things in person and not as we were doing over chat. So the next morning, we found a spot to sit in the newsroom to talk over our issues.
So last night, I was annoyed about something that happened over chat after I left the office.
First, I'm sorry that it happened that way. Like, I agree that we should not be doing last minute edits that the person who owns the episode, which you did, does not get to sign off on. And I kind of in the back of my mind knew that was happening, but we were both in this like chaos mode where you were, I was running to an appointment and it was 5 p.m. Right.
I think maybe you felt more strongly about it than I gave you credit for, because you said, I want this edit. I had taken a bunch of your other edits on a previous draft. And then I had said, this one thing that you said, I don't really agree with. I think we should keep it in.
Yeah.
And then you heard it in the final draft of the show that was right about to be published, and you were like, I still don't like this. And that was the thing I didn't have a chance to respond to.
It wasn't just an edit I didn't like. It was something where I
you didn't like the
didn't
way you
like the way I not sounded, that I was saying something I don't want to be on the record saying and don't mean.
Yeah.
And I think that I don't know how to like codify this. I'm not sure if we can, but it's if you ever were like, I don't want to say this on tape.
Yeah.
I feel like there should be some sort of
clause
and like making a show where it's like, if you ever were like, I hate people who juggle, and then you were like, wait, I don't believe that. But I think I could have expressed that to you in person and also been more clear about it.
I understood that you felt like you weren't represented well in this thing that you said, and I felt like you were overreacting. And so I think probably I didn't understand the extent to which it bothered you. And then I also kind of was like, I think she's overthinking this. Like, I think to me, that moment when I listened to it sounded perfectly innocuous exchange. And
right.
I think that probably what needed to happen was you needed to communicate to me, I don't like this. You're not getting why I don't like this, but this is about
yeah,
something about me that I don't want on tape. I think that not to get too meta about it, but I think the value of talking face to face is that the issue I thought we were having was that I was like, well, this is my episode, so I should be the final sign off.
Yeah, which I think is an issue.
But you basically agree
problems.
With that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we didn't let it continue to unfold over chat, because this is a busy morning and that would have been easy to do.
Yeah. I feel like we came to two important points, which is that like the person who owns the episode should own the episode, and we should be respectful of that. And we should also be mindful if there's like times and episodes people really feel uncomfortable with what they're saying and try to express that better. Because I think it's good to have the pushback mechanism, though. Like, I don't want anyone to feel like they can't say, like, no, you sound good, and we keep it in, because I think that instinct is right, too.
Right. We should be like, I'm invoking.
Yeah.
I'm invoking the, you know, personal discomfort clause.
Yeah. As somebody who does like face-to-face encounters, that went even better than I thought it would.
You were in paradise. That was so face-to-face. And it would have been a bigger fight if it had stayed on chat.
Yeah.
Because we would have just kept kind of missing each other's main point and staying annoyed privately about the things we were annoyed about.
Yeah.
So I honestly felt bad about sending you a snotty chat message at like 9:30 at night the minute after I did it. And then I was nervous about sitting together and talking about it. And then so relieved that we did. And I think that we came away from it understanding something that we didn't understand before, which is that's the whole idea.
Yeah, I agree. I will say that we spent 20 minutes talking about this one chat, and I don't know how we're supposed to do that for all of our interpersonal conflicts. Like, that seems untenable.
I think if we had snotty chat arguments every day, we would have to probably be more efficient about the IRL conversations. But this doesn't come up that often. It's not that common that we have a real life bona fide conflict like this. Maybe like every 2 or 3 weeks, once a month. I don't know.
Yeah.
So we could do a 20 minute heart to heart every month.
Yeah. All right. We'll try to commit to that.
Don't even lie. You want to do a 20 minute heart to heart every day.
Right now. I think it's fair to say we enjoyed a lot of these experiences, but the measure of success for our experiment was if we used a tip that we learned from our coach and it worked, then we would consider it a success. Would you say that we did it?
I think we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we wouldn't have talked face to face if it hadn't been for Ben. And the face to face talk was way more fruitful than a chat conversation would have been. So I think that equals it worked.
Yes, agree. I think we need to say that seeing Ben is not a reasonable option for most people who are just working on work projects with their coworkers.
Yeah, they don't have $400 out of pocket to spend on improving their work relationships.
But I do think it is valuable to work on your work relationship. And that's something that Erica, who we talked to earlier, said is a skill that most of us aren't trained for.
I think if companies were smart, they would pick up the slack here a little bit. Like, maybe not invest in $400 management coaches for everybody, but do some training around this with their employees and take it seriously as something people need to work on.
I don't know. I would be down for a certain company to continue paying for $400 therapy sessions. I don't know. I think it's a good idea. Next week on Works For Me, Francesca cleans out her inbox.
Where would you say I rank in, like, among all the people you work with? Am I, like, the worst about email?
Or no,
am
no.
Am I in the middle, or am I close to the bottom?
I don't think you're at the very bottom, but you're near the bottom.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Works For Me. If you like our show, head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts and rate, review, and subscribe. This show was hosted by me, Becca Greenfield.
And me, Francesca Levy. And if you have a workplace problem you're trying to solve, we'd love to hear about it. So leave us a voicemail at 212-617-0166, and we might use it on the show. Or you could tweet at us. I'm at Francesca Today.
And I'm at RZ Greenfield. You can find more great Works For Me content on our show page at Bloomberg.com/WorksForMe, where we also have illustrations done by Jordan Spear.
This show was produced by Topher Forges.
And Francesca Levy is Bloomberg's head of podcasts.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.